Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL hockey pod, Puckcast, with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. And we got big news right off the top today. We are grateful for the support of a new sponsor called Owner's Box, and you're going to hear a little bit about Owner's Box a little later in the show. AJ is going to fill our listeners in on the details relating to them. For now, AJ, I bring you on board, and we have another tough storyline to talk about off the top, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So Carey Price has entered the league's assistance program, which means, you know, according to the team, it means he'll be on basically an indefinite leave for the next 30 days at minimum. Could certainly be longer than that. So did some rough math. 30 days would be about a...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
14-game absence for him. And so obviously he was dealing with that knee injury during the offseason, and now this latest issue. They're understandably not providing a whole lot of details in terms of why exactly he's voluntarily agreed to enter the assistance program there, but certainly we hope that it's a sign of good things to come for him in the future, and that everything would come out all right for him and his family here. That's obviously the more important thing than the hockey side of it, but we can get into the hockey side a little bit later when we talk about Montreal later in the show.
Absolutely, AJ. A very sensitive issue, a very sensitive time for the Price family. Wish Carey a complete recovery from the trial that he's going to go through in the next little while. And I'm sure we each know many people that have gone down the street of dealing with anxiety and depression and other mental-related issues. The cloak has been taken off this thing, and it's quite rightly regarded as just another illness. It's a mental illness, and it's a tough one to consider when you're talking about Carey Price, who I think back to the playoffs last year, AJ, and the guy played with such a high level of concentration and focus, and to think that that's been jeopardized by whatever he's going through right now just tells you that it could happen to anyone. So we sincerely wish the best for him and hope for a complete recovery. Don't like hearing about this news for anybody, so wish him the best. In any case, we turn our attention now to the final of our four preseason podcasts, where we focus on the Atlantic Division, and it includes Montreal. It also includes Boston, Buffalo, Detroit, Florida, Ottawa, Tampa, and finally the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I get to talk about them a little bit later in the show. You might have to put a lasso on me through the computer somehow to get me to stop, partner. It's been a while. So again, as we have for the other three pods, we're going to go through each team's rosters and take a look at the depth charts there, and AJ, why don't you lead us off with a breakdown of the forward combinations in Boston?
Yeah, so the first line here is everything we've come accustomed to in terms of Boston, and has been the same for a couple of years now in Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak. Obviously, with the limited season and some injuries in there along the way, Pasternak was limited to just 48 points last year, but I don't see any reason that he shouldn't get back to being near the top of the goal race here. 48 goals the year before when he had 70 games at his disposal. So I really think 50 is certainly a possibility for him. And he'll be and should be probably the first player targeted off this Boston team. But any of that trio, in your drafts can really offer some value. The difference here is Charlie Coyle steps into the second line center role as David Krejci has returned to the Czech Republic. He'll play with Taylor Hall for the entire season instead of just a short stint, but Taylor Hall certainly seemed to benefit from the move to Boston last year. Craig Smith rounding out the top six. I would say Craig Smith is really the only name here that's maybe in danger of losing out to somebody else in this lineup. You know, maybe if Charlie Coyle had a really rough go, they would consider Eric Halla as another option. But I just don't see it. I think this group is pretty set. Jake DeBrus might be the one guy that could challenge Craig Smith for those opportunities. But right now we'll have DeBrus, Eric Halla, and Nick Foligno comes over and joins this team, and he'll be in the third line role. Could be some rotation further down the lineup. Guys like Curtis Lazar, Chris Wagner, Thomas Nosek, they'll kind of round out that group. But Paul, do you, I guess the big question with this forward group, that, as I see it, is, you know, do you agree, is Craig Smith probably the most likely of that top six to maybe get bounced at some point in the season?
Yeah, I think he should definitely feel threatened. Jake DeBrusk has played a top six role there before, and Nick Foligno has brought in there. He can play anywhere from the top line to the third, so there's two threats to him. But I'm also looking at the second line center position. AJ, Charlie Coyle finished the season with 16 points last year, albeit he missed a chunk of games. I just wonder if he can do proper justice to what they've gotten out of a second line in David Krejci in the past. So that, to me, is the big question mark, along with Smith. Two guys there in the top six that I think they're going to be pushed by other people down on the roster. And probably that's a good thing. I even look at a guy like Trent Frederick, AJ. Maybe he's a guy that is a bit of a sleeper here. He possesses all the tools that I like in a player, a rugged guy with a touch around the net. And he won't be messed around with at all, I don't think. And he creates some space for players that he's playing with. I think that's he brings quite a package to the table. They've also been down on Jake DeBrusk over the last calendar year, AJ. He had a better profile a couple of years ago with this club, and I thought he'd be a fixture on the second line over there in Boston. So some challenges where there weren't as many in the past, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Which takes us to the defense, and much the same story there. Matt Grzelcyk and Charlie McAvoy, that looks like your first line pairing. McAvoy, unquestionably, the top offensive piece from the back end, and he will be challenged to lead the power play again. Should be a formidable one when you consider the top three guys in the number one line, as usual, being one of the most difficult groups to play against. But McAvoy, I figure he got 30 points last year in 56 games. That should translate to about 50 plus in a full calendar of NHL play in an 82-game schedule. And he will be supported by Grzelcyk. He had 20 points last year, and I think the Bruins will be thrilled if he can approach 35 to 40. Beyond that, it takes a big step down in terms of offense from the back end, AJ. They added Mike Riley, who's a big physical presence, and he had a 27-point season as well. I don't see him chasing McAvoy down to lead the scoring from the back end, but I wonder if you have a different opinion about him, and if you want to talk about any of the D-men, here's your shot.
No, I mean, I agree with that. I think the one player that I would maybe keep an eye on that could potentially chip in a little bit more, I mean, I'm not expecting him to, you know, compete with McAvoy, but Brandon Carlo had just 4 points last year, but he only got to play in 27 games due to injury. Now, again, I don't think he's going to be, you know, a 40-50 guy, but could he put up 20? Sure. And maybe in a deeper format or night-to-night in DFS contests, that might be a player to consider taking a look at there, because he's certainly not going to break the bank for you. Between the pipes, obviously the big change here is Linus Ullmark is going to be the guy for them, alongside Jeremy Swayman. They brought in Ullmark from Buffalo. I have some concerns about this. Number one being he has, you know, his career high is 17 wins. Obviously, Boston will need more than 17 wins out of him. And his games played has never crept over 40. 37 is his high there. So I don't expect they're looking to completely split him and Swayman. I would anticipate mostly, you know, a 60-40 percentage split in terms of the games played here. And that's going to put some pressure on Ullmark to play on a basis that he really hasn't yet at the NHL level to this point. So that's kind of my biggest concern for them overall in terms of trying to figure out, you know, how this goalie situation is going to look going forward.
Definitely agree with you, partner. Tuukka Rask has made noises about the fact that he still wants to be a part of this mix, but may not be a factor in this team, if at all. I expect him to sign something maybe in the second half of the season when he gets everything physically and mentally to 100% in his life. And mostly it's a physical issue, I guess, at the moment. But I share your concern about Ullmark. He's toiled in a mediocre environment career to date, and there'll be a lot of pressure on him to fill Rask's shoes. Swayman had a nice start with the club last year, winning 7 of 10 decisions, a goals against of 1.5. He won't keep it down there. He's a good prospect, but this Bruin tandem is an untested one in Boston, and they'll really be counting on Ullmark in a big way to reach the potential that some see for him. Could be an interesting pick in the draft. I wouldn't rate him among the top 10 goalies, but maybe a notch below, and so govern yourselves accordingly in your fantasy drafts. In terms of the Buffalo Sabres, boy, are there a few questions there, AJ. We've talked about Jack Eichel's situation. I don't know if it's getting any closer to resolution, but I'm hearing whispers that things are trending in a more positive direction in terms of teams inquiring, more medical information available. So that is a sliver of good news, but in terms of what the on-ice product might look like for the Sabre uniform, Jeff Skinner needs to get his act together. This guy has, for my money, the worst contract in hockey, given the point production that he's delivered along with collecting those big checks. Dylan Cousins looks like he could be the big winner in terms of sweepstakes for a top-line role here. He was a fourth-liner last year. They're trying to get him to find his way looked like the junior star that he was, and a real key in terms of Team Canada junior exploits in his career. And maybe the guy that's going to be the leader offensively is Victor Olofsson. He got 32 points last year, AJ, and he's going to need somebody at center to help him get to where I think he can go is about 50 to 60 points, and that might be the team leadership here. Second line, they got a prospect from Boston in Anders Bjork, who will get second line left wing minutes, and they're waiting for Casey Mittelstadt to take the next step behind Cousins. Those will be your two scoring line centers, Cousins and Mittelstadt. Tage Thompson, a big physical winger who has to do better than the 14 points that he accumulated last year. I think he should be targeting 30 to 35 this year in a fuller slate. Then they have hopes for a couple of youngsters on the third line that might threaten the top six if, say, Skinner doesn't deliver. I could see Arttu Ruotsalainen taking a shot at his role. Maybe Zemgus Girgensson, who was making a return to Buffalo Sabres lineup after missing the entire season. So they've got some hopes in the depth chart. Maybe even Drake Kajula and Vinny Hinostroza on the right wing. But the pickings are slim here. And then I haven't mentioned Kyle Okposo yet. He is way down on the depth chart, but way up on the cap-friendly chart in terms of how much money he's taking out of their salary cap. So a big question mark around him, too.
This is such a bad team, Paul. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's a young team, is what I'll say. There's a lot of guys here that could develop into something more. But in terms of looking at this season and this season alone, I mean, there's just nothing to really be excited about. To some of the guys you mentioned, you know, Victor Olofsson, 26, Casey Mittelstadt, 22, Tage Thompson, 23, Dylan Cousins is 20, Rasmus Asplund is 23. Like, there's some reason for long-term optimism here, but for this season, boy, outside of Victor Olofsson, I might not really touch this team a whole lot in terms of season long. Maybe you touch a little bit periodically for DFS, as I said. Now, I will throw one name out there that I am definitely intrigued by in all formats, and that's JJ Paterka. He's a 19-year-old player. Whether he makes the team or not remains to be seen. He's definitely not locked himself in, but Paul, you know as well as anybody how high I am on the DEL. The German league there. This guy racked up 9 goals, 11 helpers in 30 games playing for Munich ice hockey club there. And I do think he's shown some pretty good scoring touch over in a league that, again, I think is underrated here. So JJ Paterka is a guy to maybe keep an eye on, especially if he makes the team. I think he could be worth maybe stashing away as a late round pickup if you have the extra roster spots, because he could be a factor on this team, and then just kind of wait and see if he makes the team or not. On the blue line, look, this is another group that has seen some pretty significant departures, and the biggest one being Rasmus Ristolainen. I know he's been a bit maligned over some of his time there, but at the end of the day, I think he was still their best defenseman on most nights. So they head into the season with Rasmus Dahlin and Henry Jokiharju as their 1-2 pairing. Again, young, like very, very young in terms of what they're doing here. Dahlin, 21, Jokiharju, just 22. So these guys have the ability to get there. They've surrounded them with a bit of an older crop in terms of Mark Pisick and Colin Miller there. Will Butcher comes over from New Jersey really as a way to kind of revitalize his career. He has struggled. You know, you look at his numbers, they literally drop every single year, 44, 30, 21, 11. Yes, the shortened seasons are a factor there, but this is a guy who hopefully would be motivated for them to kind of turn things around. But that top pairing is where I think most of the offense is going to come from. They'll be, I think, the primary power play guys, at least as far as I see it, Paul.
Yeah, you mentioned Will Butcher. You know, where skill meets opportunity, that's where the numbers could rise. And there's no question this guy is a skilled defender in terms of offensive abilities, and he's got to do much better than 11 if he's given half a chance to produce and be a part of the Buffalo power play, let's say. So I would put a little star by him as a very late flyer in your pools if you're looking that way. But otherwise, I see Rasmus Dahlin being the only guy that gets drafted in season long from this crop. To make a long story short. Then we look at the goalie situation, AJ, and Dustin Tokarski and Craig Anderson look like they're the guys that are going to handle the role going forward. They had some hopes that Aaron Dell would be a part of this mix, but you know, you just shared that with me offline that he's been sent to the minors, so I really don't know what to expect from the goalie group here. Tokarski is the younger of the two, but Craig Anderson, this guy's like a cat. He has 9 lives in the NHL. Just when I thought he was done and finished a couple of years ago, he wound up being in a playoff situation with Washington. So he just won't go away. And maybe it's a good thing for the Sabres that he hasn't, because he might be the guy that they turn to. I'm not sure how I see this goalie split, but I can't see either one of them playing 50 games.
Yeah, what's interesting about this, you know, I was talking about, yeah, the ages before. So I'm pulling these numbers from our friends over at Cap Friendly here. The forward group, average age, 25.8. The defense group is 25.0. The average age for the goaltending tandem is 36. So they're getting all of their veteran experience out of Craig Anderson and Dustin Tokarski. Look, as far as Buffalo goes, the future at this point is very clearly Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. They sent him down to the minors to continue to develop, and I think part of that was the fact that he could be sent to the minors without having to go on waivers. It's telling to me that Aaron Dell cleared waivers yesterday and that nobody took a shot at him, so kind of where his standing has gone. So I think we'll see mostly Anderson in net here, but it could very well be a pretty even share of the workload here for them. I'll head us over to the Motor City and talk about the Detroit Red Wings, who are going to be highlighted up front with a first line, at least as it looks right now, of Tyler Bertuzzi, Dylan Larkin, and Philip Zadina. Look, I think the biggest thing we have to talk about with Bertuzzi is that, you know, you need, if you're drafting him, you need to be aware of the fact that he will not be playing in Canada. That's 9 games that he's going to miss, you know, for opting out of being vaccinated against COVID-19 here. So he will not travel with the Red Wings to Canada. So you need to know that at most, without any injuries, this is a guy that's playing 73 games instead of the normal 82 here. And on top of that, you're talking about a guy who's just come back from a back injury. He's making his preseason debut tonight, hasn't played yet in the preseason. There's a lot of red flags ticking up here for me in terms of Tyler Bertuzzi. The upside is, in the 2 seasons before last year, so 2018 and 2019, he was like a few points shy of hitting 50 points on the year. He had 21 goals in both of those seasons. So clearly a capable player. And so you kind of got to balance all that. If I'm looking at, you know, taking him or not, I don't know the answer to that one, Paul. I haven't had a draft where I've been presented with that opportunity yet. So for me, I'm still on the fence about it. I do think Zadina, for his part, could face significant challenges from a pair of guys on the second line here for that top spot. First of which being Bobby Ryan, who really revitalized his career last year. And then even Robbie Fabbri, another player who came into Detroit, I think the year before that, and kind of re-jumpstart after some injury woes for him. So I really like the second line. I don't mind that it's centered by Pius Sitter right now, but I do think that could change. You know, the center position is pretty weak on this club, all things considered, when you talk about, oh, they have Dylan Larkin. Like, they have a number one center. They just don't really have a number two, or in some ways a number three center. So there's some depth issues here. It's Vladislav Namestnikov, Michael Rasmussen, and Sam Gagne that make that third line. A couple other names could factor in here as well, Carter Rowney being one of them, Adam Ernie. So other than maybe Bertuzzi and Larkin being the 1-2 on the top line in the United States, I really don't think you know, there's too much certainty about the rest of the group, at least not the way I see it, Paul.
Yeah, I agree. But if there's one thing that I'm going to suggest as a hopeful note for Red Wings fans, the core of offensive choices is loaded with guys that have performed at some at a decent level elsewhere. And so if they can find their best performance from those foreign locales and bring them to Detroit, there's hope here. And Pius Sutter is where I'll start. He had a very nice year with Chicago last year, AJ, and allowed them to shuffle things around in their offense, and he held down a second line position at the center position. So it did accumulate 27 points. That translates to about 40 to 45. And I think the Wings would be thrilled to see that kind of performance out of him this season as a step forward in his development. Bobby Ryan has been a feel-good story in the NHL for the last year and a half. And I, like you, wish him all the best. But he's getting a little older every year or two, just like we all are. But the opportunity still exists to do something on the right side here. And he'll be challenged to hold off the likes of Giovanni Smith and Sam Gagne to retain that second-line position. Robbie Fabbri is another guy who can be an explosive scorer. He's done so in the past in junior, certainly, and shown flashes at the NHL level. So that's where the opportunity for growth is in terms of a spike in production on the left side here. You mentioned Bertuzzi and his limitations. If he comes north of the border, he's still a very capable scorer, AJ. And as long as he's partnered with Larkin, that could be a really interesting dynamic line with him and Zadina on the wings there. You mentioned Namestnikov. He's one of those guys that is a veteran that's been around and produced elsewhere. And he'll be kind of insurance against injury or underperformance. And he'll move up and down this lineup, I think, because of that. So, and Giovanni Smith, I touched on him, a young guy that the Wings have big hopes for, starting off in fourth line on the depth chart. We've seen a lot of people jump up from that and to succeed, and he has all the tools to do so. So he and Taro Hyro is another guy that we should mention, highly regarded offensive pieces who have yet to find their way, but could be sleepers in this environment. The Detroit defense has also got a couple of guys that I'm going to key on this season. Danny DeKeyser's been around. We know what they'll get out of him. A modest point total last year of 12. Maybe he gets 20-25, but his partner is the guy that will be the linchpin on the defense, and that's Philip Ronick, who's been a power play fixture with the Wings in his time there. And he hopes the 26 points that he got last season should translate to upwards of 40 in a good career growth kind of a year for him to achieve this season. And Nick Leddy comes over from the island, and he had 31 points last year. It was a nice pickup by the Red Wings there, but the guy that he's partnered with is the guy that is maybe the most exciting prospect in the Detroit mix, and that's Moritz Seider. He's been spoken of breathlessly in this organization in terms of his potential, can be go down as one of the greats in Detroit defensive lore. That's good company. That's excellent company if he can achieve it, but he needs to take a first step as a pro in the NHL. He comes here after getting 28 points in the Swedish Elite League and 41 games played last year, so he does have an offensive side to his game, and he'll have ample opportunity to show it here because he won't be threatened by the likes of Mark Stahl and Troy Stetcher, who are basically a third-pairing shutdown group that brings a lot of experience but not too much offensive acumen. They're going to be the guys that are tasked to handle the big boys on the other teams when they come to town.
You know, I'm actually going to disagree with you a little bit there, Paul, in regard to Troy Stetcher. Look, Yeah, you know, the numbers totals, again, we're not talking about a guy that's ever going to win the Norris here, but you look at his first season in Vancouver, played in 71 games, 24 points, 8 of which came with the power play. Now, since then, he hasn't really had any really opportunities to put up power play numbers, but I think it's something that maybe he could play his way into in the season, and then it would potentially set him up to be a 25 to 30 point guy if he can stay on the ice for a full 82 game season. So I actually am a little bit higher on Troy Stetcher. Again, not somebody that's going to win the Norris Trophy here, but I think he could actually challenge Maurice Sider for a bigger role and make a larger impact on the offensive side of the ice. Between the pipes, it'll be new man Alex Nedeljkovic, who takes primarily, I would say, 55 games, maybe a little bit lower. He comes in after, joining Detroit in a trade that included Jonathan Bernier, headed to the Hurricanes. A little bit of a head-scratcher, if I'm being totally honest with you. A young goalie who's 25 years of age has shown decent flashes, went 15-5-3 last year with a 1.90 goals against average. Like, those aren't bad numbers. I don't know why you trade that guy away. But whatever Carolina's doing, maybe we'll all see it here in Detroit. He'll be backstopped by Thomas Greiss, who's been I don't even want to call Greiss like a career backup. That is kind of what he's been. But he's been like a career split start guy since his time in Long Island. You know, he number game played like 41, 51, 27, 43. So I think he's fully capable of sharing the crease here with Nedeljkovic if needed. But again, I do think you bring in a young guy like that with a veteran. Greiss is 35 years old. So a veteran that can kind of help him grow and develop here. And I think Thomas Greiss is a great player to do that. So for my part, like I said, about 55 games is where I see Nedeljkovic maybe trending a little closer to 50 this season.
Yeah, I like this pairing, AJ. And the acquisition of Nedeljkovic was a real masterstroke by Stevie Yzerman. It's the kind of move that you expect from a top-end GM, to pluck a young prospect out of a situation where he may not get the opportunity or may not get the money that he's due. And certainly Detroit looked after that to say, we have a lot of faith in this youngster and think he could be a number one here for a while. And so that's the profile that he has with the Red Wings. And Greiss, to your point, has been a very solid 1B wherever he's been in the past, mostly with Long Island in his career, but showed well in with Detroit last year as well, when you consider a 270 goals against average on a team that was playing against a lot of league heavyweights for much of their season last season. So that situation will not be changed for him, and I think it's a great insurance policy with Nedeljkovic number one and Greiss the insurance policy at number two. I agree with your split. I think it could be 50-32 and a couple of quality guys back there for sure. Another team where a lot of people are really high on the Florida Panthers, AJ, I don't know where I land on this just yet, because I do see some concerns, but you've got to be excited about their number one center, Alexander Barkov. He's underrated. When you talk about the top centers in the league, he should be right there in the discussion. That's the next tier below the obvious names of Matthews and McDavid and McKinnon, let's say. He's in the next tier below that, and he should threaten. He might even be a top 10 scorer in this league. He was better than a point per game player last year, and he really formed an excellent partnership with Carter Verhaeghe last season. And Sam Reinhart is a guy who had a big point total last year, and I think that's a great combination at the number one forward line. And Jonathan Huberdeau drops down to a second line situation. Sam Bennett centering him. He came on strong after a trade that brought him into the situation here in Florida and looked really good there. They're looking for Owen Tippett to take the next step in his development. He was a high draft pick not so long ago. He had 18 points last year, and he needs to take the next step. Otherwise, he's going to be threatened by Anthony Duclair, who right now is penciled in to to a third line situation. He had 32 points last year, so you could see those two guys challenging one another for that second line position on that wing. Mason Marchman and Joe Thornton, ex of the Toronto Maple Leafs, both of these guys. I had a lot of time for Matt Marchman. He was a top prospect in the Toronto organization. Brings a lot of size to the table, some grit, and if he could find a little bit of scoring touch, he would be a real find here in Florida and a real sleeper pick, in my opinion. I don't like Joe Thornton as a third-line center here, AJ. I'm going to come out and say that right away. I think the experiment in Toronto failed early on to include him as a top-six forward. That's not his profile anymore, and I don't think he's a third-liner either. I think time has caught up to Joe, surefire Hall of Famer, and I don't know if he reaches the 20-point mark like he did last season, even though he's going to play, hopefully, a few more games than he did last year. Guys like Patrick Hornquist and Frankie Vetrano, nice insurance policies on the fourth line. They're not your typical fourth line players, and that's where I think people start to get excited about this team, that they can afford to put players like this on a fourth unit. So that's where a lot of the excitement comes from. I just wonder if Tippett can deliver the goods, Verhaeghe can repeat. So there are some question marks here for me.
Yeah, there definitely are question marks, but I think Sam Reinhart might be, we'll see how the season goes, but might be the best acquisition of this last offseason. Yeah, they had to give up a first-round pick to get him, but talking about a player that's hit the 20-goal mark four straight years, five of the last six, and I think is a real great addition to the top of their lineup here, and I think they'll be, pretty happy if they can get another 20 goals out of him. Verhaeghe, as you mentioned, his first year in Tampa, he came pretty close to that as well. He had 18 goals in 43 games. So you talk, again, 82-game season, like that's pushing 30. So I love this group here that they have. The nice part about having Reinhart and Verhaeghe is it allows them to split up Barkov and Huberdeau to give themselves some more roster flexibility. And like you said, if Owen Tippett doesn't step it up necessarily, I think Vetrano, Hornquist, Duclair, any one of those guys could certainly be in the mix for a top spot here. On the blue line, we see Mackenzie Weegar and Aaron Ekblad as the top pairing. It's not much really different for this group. Brendan Montour, who they brought in last year, at the trade deadline, he'll get a full season with Florida, which I think will benefit his numbers. He hasn't really had, he hasn't broken 20 in the last three seasons, but he's been playing in Buffalo. Like, come on. the years before that, he had 25 in Anaheim, 32 the year before that. I think that's closer to the ceiling that we'll see from Montour this season, especially paired up with Gustav Forsling. I like this group. I don't have a lot of concerns really about, the bottom of the lineup either. Nutavar, Gudas, Connaughton, more shutdown guys who will produce. So, I don't know if there's a lot of concerns here either, Paul.
All right. I'm going to say the defense here, I think, is one of the interesting parts of this team too that should be, I'll say there's some questions here as well. Weegar is a guy that will partner very well with Aaron Ekblad, but they lost Keith Yandle. That's a bigger loss than most people are accounting for. And you wonder if Weegar can fit in and deliver the goods off last season's performance, 36 points in his games played last year. That's better than a point every two games. So he should be penciling in for 40 to 45 minimum, I would say, if he wants to achieve that level of production again. Aaron Ekblad is the guy, though, people are going to be watching for, AJ, and should be the linchpin on the back end here. He only had 22 points, and he's going to have to double that at least to lead this team in a manner that you would expect a top-tier team to perform and have a guy like that on their back end. Brandon Montour, probably the best of the rest, in my opinion. 18 points is what he got last year. Gustav Forsling, 17. If these guys can each get 30 to 35, I think the Panthers will be happy. And beyond that, Radko Gudas is one of the toughest guys to play against in this league. So that's what he brings to the table. And Nutavara is also going to be cast in that shutdown defensive role. In the Nets, this is where the intrigue really gets into high gear for me, AJ. And a lot of people are talking about Spencer Knight as a real challenge to Sergei Bobrovsky. And I think Bobrovsky needs to be challenged, quite frankly. I've maligned him in this corner for a couple of seasons. Those 2 years that he's had in Florida, performed very ordinarily, not living up to the big price tag of over $8 million a year in cap money going to him. Spencer Knight will be given a chance to unseat him, I think, at some point this season. And if he does, he's got a shot to be Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, absolutely. This has to be one of the most intriguing goalie combos that we have seen this season. You know, you've got an established veteran who's making, you know, hand over fist in terms of dollars, and a youngster who has really stepped in quite well to start his NHL career. Now, can he do it every single night? Can he do it against, you know, elite level competition? Like, there are certainly still questions. You know, his debut was fantastic. So we'll see. We'll have to watch this one and see how it breaks down, because you know, Sergei Bobrovsky normally, you know, based on the salary, I think you'd say is a lock to play almost every night, but that's clearly something that they've shown is not the case in using Spencer Knight during the playoffs. And yeah, I'm so intrigued to watch this one throughout the season.
Yeah, I think Bobrovsky should play more than half the games, but like I said, if they give Knight half a chance, it might be an interesting surprise and development there that impacts the trophy race for the Rookie of the Year for sure. And you wonder how they'll fare in the standings if they rely on him more than Bobrovsky too. We'll get to that at the end of the show. But for now, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's signature NHL hockey podcast. We call it Puckcast, and we hope you enjoy it. Stick around. We'll be back right after these messages. All right, we're back on the Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, and we also want to introduce our listeners to our main sponsor, Owner's Box. Over to you, AJ. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, you're looking for a new way to play fantasy sports? Owner's Box offers two game types, tournament, salary cap, and head-to-head live drafts. All new players receive a $25 bonus when they deposit $10 or more on the platform. Be sure to check out Owner's Box new Super Flex Salary Cap game, a revolutionary new way to play fantasy football that brings a new strategic alternative to the traditional season-long formats and daily fantasy games. The Super Flex Salary Cap format, available only on Owner's Box, removes the kicker and defense position slots and focuses only on offensive players. Users will build their 9-player lineup while staying under the $50,000 salary cap. Large prize pools will be available throughout the season. The Superflex position, the main differentiator of the contest, gives the user the option to select an additional quarterback, running back, wide receiver, or tight end. Ultimately, it makes the quarterback a premium position versus other fantasy formats. And don't worry, listeners, Owner's Box will have NHL contests live on the site for the start of the season. Play the Owner's Box salary cap contest for free. Use the promo code Drew, DREW9, for a free $10 entry into the Sunday only 50K salary cap contest.
So we welcome Owner's Box aboard. But before we continue on with the four remaining teams, let's also have AJ remind our listeners how to get in touch with us during the week.
Yeah, absolutely. We are always open to your comments and questions on Twitter. We love interacting with all of our listeners and helping you with your fantasy teams. You can reach me on Twitter at AJSouls24, and you can follow Paul the Statsman at Statsman22. If we get a really good question, we are happy to share those questions on upcoming shows as well. So please reach out to us, hit us up with those questions, comments, and we are here to help.
You know what, AJ? One question did come my way, and it was regarding the 5-part series on Amazon regarding the Maple Leafs season last year. I honestly didn't think I'd watch it. But with that question, I was prompted and I thought, let me take a look at it. And they did watch it. And I encourage others to take a look behind the scenes of of a typical season for a typical NHL team. They covered a lot of the key storylines then and gave us a little more color relating to some of them, including the Tavares injury, the situation with Freddie Anderson's uncertain health physically during the course of the season, and that sort of thing. A really interesting look behind the scenes, behind the screens, and really get up close to see what made some of these players tick during a season that obviously didn't end the way that they had hoped, but intriguing for me anyway. And it takes us to the rival that knocked him out in that first round, Montreal Canadiens, the forward lines. AJ, what do you make of the composition of this group? I'll let you wax poetic about them first.
Yeah, I think it's up in the air. I think that's about the only thing you can say here. You know, Paul Byron still dealing with a hip injury that'll keep him out until likely the end of December. Mike Hoffman has also been facing an absence. He should at least be ready to go maybe a week into the season. So it's so up in the air right now that it's just hard to trust anything that you're seeing from this team. But look, here's my best guess, or our best guess, Paul, as what we'll see for opening night. I do think Hoffman is a contender to be a top-line guy here, entering, you know, week two, week three of the season, whenever he gets back. But for now, it looks like we'll see Tyler Toffoli, Nick Suzuki, and Cole Caulfield here. Look, I am excited about Cole Caulfield. We have talked about him on our, you know, on the DraftKings show. Maybe it's a little bit of Regency biased, as I am a Wisconsin Badgers faithful. In fact, I'm going to the game on Saturday, the season opener, so looking forward to that as well. But I think Caulfield can have a big, big year and should be right in the mix, if not taking home the Calder Trophy this season. So definitely you're going to want to key in on him. They've got Nathan Drouin back with the team after a leave of absence he took last year, with Christian Dvorak and Brendan Gallagher. Although it could also be Josh Anderson. Those two guys could flip back and forth throughout the season. But for now, we'll put Gallagher on the third line with Jake Evans and Joel Armia. Cedric Paquette, another player that's banged up right now, is going to play, it looks like, isn't going to play in their next preseason game. So he might not be back until opening night. Situation to really watch there. So, yeah, there's so many injuries to know exactly what you're going to get from this group. I just don't know how you make heads or tails of it right now when you have all these guys banged up, Paul.
Yeah, they're really pinning their hopes on a real recovery season for Jonathan Drouin. You mentioned him. He's probably the most skilled forward on this team outside of Caulfield and Suzuki, I'll say. But his profile was missing from the playoffs. He was in a state that didn't make him fit to play, dealing with some of the demons, I suppose, that maybe are facing Carey Price at the moment. So we hope that he can get his act together like Price and deliver on the ice and feel good about his life on a day-to-day basis off the ice going forward. And if he does, this guy is at least a 40 to 45 point player. He looks like he's going to be given every chance to play in a top six role. But the key, I think, offensively is how does Christian Dvorak fit into this team? He toiled in relative anonymity in Arizona. This is going to be a big deal, a big change for him under the bright lights of the microscope that is to play in Montreal colors. And he did get 31 points last year. That would translate to a 50-point season in 80 games. I think the Canadians should be happy with that. It would be a career high for Dvorak should he reach the 50-point plateau, if memory serves. Suzuki is the superstar in waiting next to Caulfield. That could be a pretty nice dynamic 1-2. And so the left wing on that position, on that line, Plum opportunity. Hoffman, you mentioned, is dealing with injuries. Toffoli likely to fill in that situation. And he will be challenged to produce at the rate that he did last year, 44 points, which would translate into a 60-plus point season. I'm going to say this right now. I don't think he gets there. I think you see a bit of regression in his game. He had almost a career best level of performance, and the visibility they got in Montreal certainly went right to his legs. He played great, but I think that we're looking at a step backward here in terms of him, largely because of the challenge for ice time that he'll see if Drouin is successful in his return and Hoffman makes good on his debut in Montreal. Josh Anderson, a guy that I really like in terms of the size and physicality that brings to the game, as well as a nice set of hands, is a real good insulator on that right wing, and he'll flip-flop with Gallagher. You mentioned quite rightly, Gallagher probably fits in as a third line. They're going to give Anderson every opportunity to be that physical presence along with the danglers, Dvorak and Drouin, on a pretty dynamic-looking second line. And they got insurance on the depth chart. Joel Armia performed well in fits and starts last season. Ditto for Arturi Lehkonen. Paul Byron, if he's healthy, could factor into that mix. So they have the opportunity to ice four pretty good forward lines. Just don't know where they'll fit right now. And the best thing I can advise is to keep an eye on the RotoWire depth charts that AJ helps update on a daily basis from the headquarters in Wisconsin, and make your best bet on game day to see who's playing with who, because there's going to be a lot of shuffling around here. The Montreal defense is going to have a different look because Shea Weber is injured and out for the season, maybe even his career, with a very bad ankle injury and a lot of miles on him. So Jeff Petrie is going to be the guy that carries the load offensively, and he's one of the best at it. He got 42 points last season, but he's in his mid-30s, and so you wonder if there's a possible regression there, AJ. I'll ask you to comment on that. The heir apparent maybe to his role is one Alexander Romanov, who only got a few minutes of ice time until he played the last few games in the last round of the playoffs. He was in the press box for most of it. They're looking for him as a youngster to take the next step in his development and maybe assume some power play minutes as well, but looks to me like he's going to be number two behind Petrie in terms of offense from the back end. They made a nice signing to get David Savard into the mix. He and Ben Chiarot and Joel Edmondson are three tall oaks that will dot the blue line depth chart and make it a real minefield for players in front of the net. But maybe Savard is a low-end offensive option as well. I see Romanov and Petrie, though, carrying the mail here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't have any reason to think, you know, Petrie would have a drop-off here. You're looking at four straight 40-point campaigns, and that includes hitting those thresholds in the last two seasons that have been, you know, shortened. So I think, by all accounts, there's nothing I've seen. Yeah, he's getting to 33, you know, a little bit older, maybe, you know, a quarter of a step slower, but I haven't seen anything there to indicate that he can't continue to produce, and he'll maintain his spot as long as he's healthy as the top power play quarterback with them. The guy I'm most intrigued here is Chris Weidman. Had a really good year in the KHL offensively, and I think he could try and stake a claim for the second power play unit. But yeah, obviously Shea Weber being done for the year is a significant loss, or career really is a big loss for them. Between the pipes, we talked about Carey Price. At a minimum, going to miss the first 14 games of the season. We'll see what it might mean after that, or when they can expect him back. But until then, it'll be Jake Allen who gets the bulk of the workload. And they've snagged Samuel Montembeau off the waiver wire to bolster their net mining. I think that was a really good choice by them. Obviously, you know, maybe they had some additional information. If I have a concern about Jake Allen being the guy, at least here for the start of the season, it's the fact that the last 2 years he hasn't played in more than 30 games. Has really, in Montreal, 29 games last year, hasn't really been a number one guy for a couple of years since, you know, really since your buddy Jordan Binnington came into the league in St. Louis there. So, yeah, the workload's gone down for him, and that can certainly be a factor, but of all the teams I think we've talked about so far today, I think there may be, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say they're maybe the best set up to lose their true number one, but actually, you know, we've talked about liking the Detroit and Florida goalie combinations. But I think they'll be okay here, especially if they can get Price back, within a month or even maybe 2 months. They should be okay, I think.
Yeah, that won't be the weak point of this team. And they picked up Samuel Montembeau from the Florida Panthers as insurance. So he probably will be Allen's backup in the early going and may have some fantasy value as a result of that. If he gets any kind of a run, could be a surprise value actually behind a pretty stout Montreal defense. But again, the success and failure of this team largely predicated on when will Carey Price check back into the lineup, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later on all fronts there. The Ottawa Senators are a team that is being plagued this offseason by the fact that Brady Tkachuk is held out for his contract situation is in limbo right now. He is the leader of this team on the ice, AJ, when they are at full strength. And by all accounts, he's not going to be ready to start the regular season. You wonder how much time he's going to need to get back up to speed if and when he does get signed back up. I'll edit that. Don't worry. Mark that 49 minutes. Okay. So anyway, back to what I was saying. Carey Price. Let me botch that. The Ottawa forward line situation. Brady Tkachuk is really the question mark for me. They got to sort out his contract situation, AJ. And if and when they do, he definitely lines up as a key part of this offense. He got 36 points last year, and the likely guy that will center him on that top line looks to be Josh Norris at the moment, Drake Batherson filling things in on the right wing. They also have to look on the second line of Tim Stützle, the star rookie last year, hoping to take another step in his development. I think you could see a 50-plus point season out of him. And maybe does Shane Pinto move into a scoring line center role, because Colin White looks like he's lost to this team for a little while with the injury that he suffered against the Leafs the other night. So there's some question marks about the depth chart there. We don't know the severity of the injury, but it didn't look very good when I was watching the game the other night. Connor Brown, I have a lot of time for this guy, AJ. Formerly of the Maple Leafs, he's just an honest player and gives you everything he's got every night. So you don't have to worry about him. You just plug and play, and he'll get that option as a second-line right winger here. And Zach Sanford, an interesting addition late in the training camp, and a trade with St. Louis comes to town and bolsters that wing position. And I wonder if Tkachuk's out of lineup, it'll be Stützle and Sanford on the left wing on the top two lines. Chris Tierney, a third line center who could move up if Pinto falters in that second line center role. They've got a lot of youth at the center position, so you'll see those three positions flip-flop. Nick Paul might even factor into the top nine offensively. Beyond that, it's Austin Watson and Scott Sabourin who make more noise with their fists and their sticks this season.
Yeah, it's a big blow, I think, to lose Colin White for 4 to 6 months here when you have everything else going on with Tkachuk not being ready to, you know, again, how long is he going to take to get up to speed? Hopefully his legs are at least under him, but, you know, he's missed the entirety of the preseason. I don't know what sort of COVID protocols he'll have to go through once he does sign the new deal, if there's going to be visa issues that he has to figure out. You know, there's a whole host of things that could delay his debut even once he signs here. And so all that factored in and made a lot of sense why they signed Tyler Ennis to a permanent contract earlier today. 1 year, $900,000 deal, so they're not breaking the bank. He had been in camp just on a professional tryout here. His best season, at least, you know, since 2014-15, his best season since then came a couple years ago with Ottawa. He put up 33 points in 61 games and logged a pretty good chunk of time on the power play. And I think even if he is filling a bottom six role, I would wholeheartedly anticipate him being on the power play, perhaps even the top power play unit here for them, because, you know, that he has that ability to kind of be a specialist, if you will. On the blue line, it'll be a familiar pairing up top in terms of Thomas Chabot and Nikita Zaitsev. Chabot obviously being the guy who will push the attack here. They didn't do much, in my opinion, to really bolster any sort of offensive output, more focus on kind of shutdown guys, and they added Michael Delzato and Nick Holden. They'll pair up Delzato with, looks like he'll be with Artem Zub, and Holden with Eric Branstrom. Victor Mete is an X-factor here. He's a player that periodically seems to show he can play offense at the NHL level, and then completely disappears for an extended period of time. So I think here it's kind of Shabbat or bust in terms of offense. You know, maybe Zaitsev could chip in, you know, maybe get over the 20 mark here, but I wouldn't expect a whole heck of a lot from him. But Paul, you obviously know him better from his time in Toronto. Is there any reason to think he can be a bigger factor?
No, I agree with you. I think he's more of a shutdown pairing guy and maybe defensive consciousness around Shabbat. But there's always intrigue around Michael Delzotto, AJ. This is a guy who's flashed offensive ability throughout his career, but it's been for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and then he goes and disappears. So I'd keep an eye on whether he gets a chance to be a pilot on the Ottawa power play if they want to give them a different look, or maybe he pilots the second group. That's a guy that is intriguing for me among this grouping. And you wonder if Victor Mete is going to factor in at all. He had been a guy that there was some promise in his future a couple of years ago in Montreal, but it hasn't materialized yet. And you wonder if he gets a chance to fill an offensive role, maybe a deep sleeper pick there in the Ottawa depth chart. But I agree with you, Nick Shabbat, Thomas Shabbat is the guy that will be looking for the elite offensive numbers from the Ottawa defensive core. The goalie situation, AJ, they're looking for a rebound year from Matt Murray, who was plagued by injury. You'll have a lot more to say about him than I'm sure. He was limited to only 24 decisions. He needs to play more than half the schedule here, and he's being paid like he should. He had a 338 goals against average. I'm going to go on record as saying he's going to be way better than that this year. And I think a big part of a significant offense improvement in the Ottawa Fortunes will be tied directly to how well he plays. They've also got a top prospect in Philip Gustafsson, who was going to get a chance to play a little more this season. He had 216 goals against in 8 decisions last year in a limited role. So I think you're going to see 50 to 55 games for Murray, and Gustafsson getting most of the rest. And maybe Anton Forsberg gets a look-see for a handful of games as well.
That's about all I would expect, Paul. I don't see a whole lot of changes. The problem has been and will continue to be Matt Murray's health, and can he stay healthy? And that's something that thus far he has shown the answer to that question is no. So, that's kind of what their season, or part of their season, is at least pinned on here. In terms of the Tampa Bay Lightning, we will see something that we have not seen in a very long time for this team, and that's Nikita Kucherov playing in a regular season game. By all accounts, he will be ready to go on Tuesday for opening night. I'm excited to watch that one, as it's conveniently also the Penguins' first game of the year. So it'll be Andre Palat, Brayden Point, and Nikita Kucherov on the top line. We've got Alex Killorn, Steven Stamkos, and then the youngster Alex Barry-Boulet. I think I got that right.
Yeah.
I'll let you correct me with your increased knowledge of French-Canadian pronunciations here. But he'll get the first crack here at that second-line role. And if there's a more plum assignment in the league for a young guy to step into, I'm not sure there's one better. All he has to do is kind of hang on to really join these guys in the 30 to 40 point threshold here. Now, Matthew Joseph will have a ton to say about that and will certainly be a factor. He penciled in for the third line with Anthony Cirelli and Ross Colton. I actually really like this fourth line, Paul. A couple of guys that maybe you could argue are a little past their prime, a little over the hill. But what they might lack in a bit of speed these days, they certainly will make up for it in experience and, hockey IQ. And that's Patrick Maroon, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, and Corey Perry. Look, that'll be a tough group to play against. You have, two motivated guys in Bellemare and Perry who want, they came to Tampa to win a cup. I mean, there's no arguing that's why you sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning right now. And so they're going to be motivated and willing to do whatever it is that they're asked of to try and win. And that's what we've seen out of Patrick Maroon here. You know, there's a guy, 27 goals at his career high, has been a 42-point producer last season, just 4 goals. But his ice time was only around 11 minutes. Like, they asked him to fill a role. He did it. And his name is etched on the cup twice now because of it. So three times, actually. I forgot about winning with St. Louis. So he's looking for the four-peat here, and I'm sure we'll want to do that.
Well, I'll begin where we should with, in terms of highlighting a new face here on the second line, is Alex Bariboulet. If he performs well, he could be in the running for the Calder Trophy with Caulfield as obviously the front runner there. But Bariboulet's got that plum assignment, as you suggested. And we know Stamkos is going to be motivated. We know Killorn is a wily veteran. And these guys are both going to get their points. They both got over a point every two games last year, and there's no reason to suspect that they won't both top the 50-point mark and maybe even higher than that. I think they should be pointed higher than that. If they do, they'll bring Bariboulet in their wake, and he could get up to 40 points as well. So the ceiling for him is very high, and the opportunity is great. So it's up to him to capitalize on that. I wonder what we're going to get out of Kucherov in a full year. He, of course, didn't register any regular season points, but he should be a top 10 scorer in this league, and the partnership with him and Point should put both of them in that realm. And so that makes Andre Palat a very intriguing pick for me. I always look for the sidekick when you're talking dynamic duos, and Andre Palat is penned into that role in the first line. So don't wait too long before you snap him up in your season-long pools as well. The third line is an interesting one. They had a very tough checking third line last year. They're going to have another one this year with maybe the most defensively responsible center in the mix here, Cirelli, competing for the Selke Award. Joseph and Colton both have some offense to their game as well. So they'll score more than the third line did last year too. So I don't think there's a step backward in the top nine in Tampa's forwards. And I love the fourth line when you think about the wily vets, Maroon and Perry around Belmar, who can play. He's played upwards of third and second line in his past. So lots of depth offensively and lots of insurance. Should somebody in the top six fall down to injury, you're going to get good value from guys that plug into those roles. The defense core begins and ends, I think, when you talk about fantasy value, with Victor Hedman. Should be one of the top three offensive pieces in the NHL from the back end. Ryan McDonagh, his best days offensively are behind him. He had 12 points last year, so don't overrate him in terms of the offense that he brings to the table. The second guy in the offensive scoring from the back end is Mikhail Sergachev. He got 30 points last year. That translates to 40-45 in a fuller schedule, and maybe he gets to run the second power play, and maybe he gets a run on the first to give Hedman a bit of a break ice time-wise. So I think there's a lot of value in picking Sergachev up in your pools. Zach Bogosian joins the club as a real good, solid conscience to the third pairing as well, allowing maybe Sergachev to flex some of that offensive muscle. And then we've winded up with Eric Cernak as another guy who has some offense to his game, picked up 18 points last year, and I could pencil him into 30 or 35 in this grouping.
Yeah, I don't have much to really add there, Paul. I mean, it obviously starts and stops with Victor Hedman, but yeah, Mikhail Sergachev, another capable offensive piece. So I'll just dive into the netminders here. Look, last season, Andrei Vasilevskiy started 75% of their games, and the games he didn't start went to Curtis McElhinney and Christopher Gibson, and they went 5-7-2. Not exactly overwhelming numbers. And so to that end, to kind of shore that up, they brought in Brian Elliott, which I think is a fantastic addition. One, I love when Wisconsin Badger players move away from the Flyers and I can start cheering for them again. That's always a bonus here. But you bring in a guy who is capable of playing limited opportunities and backing up in a way that doesn't see you losing games. And that's what they really did have previously. So if you carry over that 75% mark, you look at Vasilevskiy playing about 60 to 62 games. That means Brian Elliott will get about 20 of them. And I think he's fully capable of, look, putting up anywhere between 12 and 15 wins in 20 games. So that, you know, that's all you really need from this team to, you know, when you have Vasilevskiy, you're not asking your number two guy to do much. Perhaps the most difficult thing is just to be ready between the infrequency of the starts. And I think Brian Elliott has shown himself capable of that. I did actually think he was a good addition when he was with the Flyers to kind of be somebody that Carter Hart could lean on. Obviously, now he won't have to be in that leadership role in terms of the netminding here. So, Paul, I will let you take it from there with the goalies, and then conveniently that sets you up to lead us into our next club.
That's right. Vasilevsky is going to be the best goalie in hockey once again. I don't think there's much doubt about that. So he'll be the first guy that goes in your season-long drafts. If you get a chance to grab him, he'll reward you, no question. But I think you make a great point to raise the comments about Brian Elliott that you did. He had a 15-9-2 record last year, a 306 goals against. That number is going to go down in the Tampa situation, but I think the win percentage could be just as high, and that will be a real boon to the Tampa team. Maybe it affords them even to look at reducing Vasilevsky's workload a titch, but not much more than that. I think he's still going to be among the lead leaders in wins. And conveniently, we now reach the 32nd team in our season preseason previews, and it's my favorite club, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And as with several other the comparable for me is the Florida Panthers. There's a lot expected of the Leafs, just as there is with Florida, but there's a lot of changes afoot in Toronto, and they focus for me on the left wing among the top two lines. There's no question that Matthews and Marner will play together, Tavares and Nylander will play together, so the key assignments and the big wins are for whoever on the roster gets to play left wing minutes with those two. And Nick Ritchie's had a very nice camp, AJ. He's really opened up my eyes. I got a closer look at his game than I ever have had in the past. Years ago, I'll remind our listeners, and it came down to a draft situation, the Leafs were considering Ritchie or Nylander in the first round. And so they picked Nylander, and Ritchie went just after. And now they got both these guys in the mix. And boy, this guy, for a big man, has the softest hands. He's got a nice touch around the net. And he's going to get some layups from Marner and Matthews, I think. So... I'm sorry about that, AJ. I got to edit that. Let me start that again.
Getting phone calls. Anything to talk about Toronto ad nauseum.
All right.
You probably texted yourself there.
No. I get phone calls through the... Even though I silence my phone, they come through my computer too. So a bit of a situation here. Any case, I'll start with the Toronto again. Oh, shoot. Let me just call.
Stop the recording.
Hello?
You picked up, then I heard you talking to,
I presume, AJ Schultz. Yes, you're very good. Now, I'm still recording, Digger, so I'm going to have to call you back. I stopped the recording so I could touch base with you, but as soon as I'm done and finished with all my stuff, I'll call you right back, okay?
Okay, you talking to AJ, by the way?
Yes.
Say hi to him for me, it's Digger. But the other thing, quickly, is that he's in the Champions League for hockey, the FSGA. Do you want in the other league as well on Monday night? We're doing a draft, so I figured you're still with RotoWire and everything else. That's what I wanted to ask.
Absolutely. Count me in.
Okay, so he's in the other league.
Okay.
So just say hi to AJ for me, but I figured you might want in, and there was an opening that came available, so I thought I'll call you before I can check with anybody else.
Thanks very much, Dig.
So RotoWire, call me back afterwards. Cheers.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
You're welcome.
Bye.
See you.
Bye. Make sure you don't stop.
No. I know. Okay, AJ, that was Digger Turnbull.
Yeah, I could kind of hear a little bit.
Yeah, he said to say hi, and he's invited me to join a league with him. I guess you already did, so looking forward to finding what this is all about. But in any case, I'll start with the Maple Leafs talk again. So in 3, 2, 1. All right, that brings us to the 32nd team of our preseason previews, and conveniently for me, I've saved the best for last. It's the Toronto Maple Leafs that we'll talk about, and there's no questions about four of the six top forwards. In Matthews and Marner, they're going to be a dynamic duo, and so are Tavares and Nylander, but it's the left-wing position on that Toronto club that is up for grabs. And I'll say this, Nick Ritchie's made a fine case for himself in the preseason so far, and he brings a lot of size as well as a pair of soft mitts around the crease, and he's going to be the recipient of some layups, I think, from the other two guys, Matthews and Marner, should he hold on to that role. And I think he's primed for a big season offensively. I'm going to peg him for upwards of 45 points. Should he be able to hold on to that role, he could even do higher than that. And then the second line, Michael Bunting has similarly opened some eyes in his preseason with the Leafs. He had 10 goals in 21 games last year in Arizona. He's a pest in the mold of Zach Hyman, and that's the guy that he's going to replace among the top six as well. And he's penciled in to partner with Tavares and Nylander here. That leaves David Kampf as an import from the Chicago situation and other clubs before that. He's going to be tasked with being the checking line center here in Toronto. Had 12 points last year. I think the Leafs will be happy if he just continues to be that shutdown type that they hope that he can be. And if he gets upwards of 30, 35 points, they'll be thrilled with that. And Alex Kerfoot, a guy that showed well in the playoffs, one of the few Leafs that did, is going to be a third line winger, but also could flip-flop in the center position there. Ilya Mikheyev looking to make a big bigger splash offensively as well. He's made some noise in the camp on and off the ice. He wants a bigger role, and he's got to bring a chip on his shoulder to the play. And he's penciled in as a third line winger, but should anybody falter, maybe even Bunting or Richie, he'll get a shot in the top six there. Beyond that, Andre Kashe is hoping to be healthy this season, and he's another guy that's played with Nick Richie in two other camps. Two other teams before, so that's a rarity in my memory to see two guys play with partners in three different clubs in the NHL. Kasha, not knowing where he's going to fit in, AJ, but could be an injury insurance type, and I wonder if they put him in the minors and kind of hide him there in the meantime, because I don't see him playing fourth line minutes. Those roles are going to be for Jason Spezza, Wayne Simmonds, much the same as the Tampa situation, two veterans there, and maybe they play with a Pierre Engvall. But one other name that I got to mention is Josh Hosang. This guy was formerly a high draft pick in the NHL, and he's got his head on right, and he's impressed me in the camp that he's had, and the Leafs just signed him to an AHL contract. This guy was a high pick in the draft a few years ago, and if he does have that mental side of the game squared away, I wouldn't be surprised to see him join the club later in the year. But he has to have a big start in the AHL, and that's the challenge before him.
Oh, sorry, Paul. I fell asleep there. I figured, you were just going to keep going. No. look, the only thing I really want to add, just, I hope our listeners wouldn't overreact too much here. There is some possibility here that Austin Matthews is not going to be ready for opening night. I don't anticipate that lasting beyond maybe a week. So, when you're in your drafts and you see that little, injury designation next to Austin Matthews, like, ignore it, is all I'm going to add there. This is a guy that, even if he misses 2-3 games, should be, 40 goals should be a breeze for him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him push for 50. He nearly got there in 1920, and so certainly a player to watch and really not too concerned about the injury tag there. On the blue line, it'll be Morgan Rielly and TJ Brodie. I think what I'm most excited here about Brodie is to see if a full, another year kind of in the system, can he rediscover that offensive game? Because it wasn't there the last year in Calgary. It really wasn't there the first year in Toronto. Can he find it? I think is my biggest question. The hard part is that the power play numbers, I don't think, are going to be there. They weren't the last 2 years, and it directly saw his production drop off. So if he can maybe force his way into some more power play opportunities, I think we should be able to expect at least more than 14. Like, that was a bad season for him. Let's just call a spade there. And I do think he could hopefully get back there. The hard part is, Jake Muzzin is a guy that also can be right about that mark. He had 27 points last year. Again, not a ton of power play opportunities the last couple of years, but could be a candidate there. So I guess, Paul, that would be my, maybe biggest question on this blue line. Rielly is going to quarterback the number one. Is it Brodie? Is it Muzzin? Is it both? Or is it somebody else that maybe takes the lead on that second unit? Because I think there's some value there that can be added to whoever gets that assignment.
Yeah, I'm going to throw the name of Rasmus Sandin into the mix, AJ. He got a look at that role in bits and pieces last season, and I think the Leafs are looking for him to assume it on a more regular basis going forward. He's also had a very strong camp with the Maple Leafs as well in that position. So I think while he's penciled in to be a third-pairing defenseman to start the season, he may even threaten Justin Hall for second-pairing minutes if all goes well. I really see him primed for a next move in his career path, and it's going to threaten Hall for regular minutes on that second pairing, but it's also going to elevate him to a power play second line situation behind Morgan Rielly. I mean, they've got insurance in TJ Brody, who's done it in the past, but they're looking really for Rielly to be that 50-plus point guy in the back end. And 2 years ago, he got 70, so if they can get that kind of a year out of him, they better think about signing him very early this season, because by the end of the year, if he's upwards of 50 points, he's going to cost more than they can afford. And that's really the question mark looking long-term in the situation. But Morgan Rielly is really the linchpin of the power play on the top line and should be rewarded by a regular role there and at least a 50-point season in the bank. You can lock that up for sure. Then the goalie situation is one that is looking different than it has in the last 5 years. There's no Freddie Anderson in the mix, AJ, but instead they've got holdover Jack Campbell, who had an outstanding regular season. 17-3-2 was the record with a .215 goals against average, and he showed me that he is a guy that can handle a workload. He played a lot of those games in a row and did it with some great efforts back-to-back-to-back. And so they're looking for him to be one part of the goaltending mix, but they also effectively swapped goalies with Carolina, and they've got Peter Mrazek in now to challenge Campbell for ice time. They gave him $3.8 million a year over each of the next three years, so they're expecting big things from him, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him challenge Campbell and maybe get more games than Campbell eventually, but Campbell will be in the Nets opening night, and from then on, it's game on in terms of a battle between two quality backstops.
Yeah, I'm thinking winning in is probably what we'll see most of here. The expectations, as you said, they're high for the Leafs. They have been for a number of years, and they can't afford to let Campbell or Mrazek, play through, if you will, any kind of mental games here. They need guys that are going to win. So I think if there's a dip in performance here, it's going to be a quick hook from Sheldon Keefe. And I would expect winners get to keep the net at this point.
All right, partner, we reached the part in the show that people are waiting for our predictions in the order of finish. Without further ado, how do you think the standings will look after Game 82 in the Atlantic Division this year?
Well, I think really we're talking about like three tiers here. There's the first and second team, there's the third and fourth team, and then there's kind of everybody else. And you could shuffle around, in any of those brackets. But for me, I just think Tampa Bay and Toronto are well ahead of the rest here. And I just think it'll come down to one or the two of them. For me, I give the edge to Tampa solely based on the net mining. The star power might lean a little bit towards Toronto when you consider, Nylander, Matthews, Tavares, Marner. But the net mining is head and tails in Tampa Bay's favor. And that's not a knock on Toronto. Tampa Bay's net mining is better than everybody else in the league. So that's my first tier, and I give Tampa Bay the edge over Toronto. From there, the third spot is kind of between Florida and Boston. Again, Florida probably has a little bit more depth that I like. We talked about a lot of good things there. Boston has the perfection line. And maybe some questions in goal. I think that's going to hurt Boston a little bit here. Florida's questions are in goal are, which of these two players do we use? Boston's are, can Linus Ullmark be a number one? That's a more concerning question. So for me, I've got Florida as the three, Boston as the four, and probably both making the playoff, Boston as the wild card here. The rest of the way, really, it could probably shuffle a little bit here. I'm going to put Detroit as the five. And we talked about their goalie situation. We talked about there being some pieces here and there, and Montreal comes in at six for me. There's just too much that has started to pile up. Hoffman, Weber, obviously Price. Like there's too many things that have piled up for me to have any faith in this team really being able to do anything this year. Ottawa comes in at seven, only because, as I said, Buffalo is a team that is not very good right now. they just aren't. There's a chance that they could get there and develop these younger guys. But for me, I have to put Buffalo at the bottom.
Yeah, I think that's one where we're going to agree. I don't see, and we agree at the top end of this division as well. I agree with you. I think Tampa's the class of the group. I hope the Leafs can stay in that neighborhood, and they'll be challenged to do so because I think there's not going to be much of a drop-off when you talk about the Tampa club. A lot of people are high on Florida, but I see a few more holes than others do, and I, like you, pencil them no higher than third in this division. I think there's a little bit of a concern with me in the departure of Keith Yandle that not too many people are talking about. He did so much for this club offensively and was a minute eater on that blue line as well. They're going to miss him, I think. And they got to sort out the goaltending situation. That's going to take some time. They should have tons of offense, and that's the key part of this team that gives them a little bit of an edge over the Boston Bruins. I think the production line you mentioned, they're a year older, and Patrice Bergeron, one of the greats in this game in the last 10 years for sure, is probably the guy that I think they're going to hope that they can squeeze another quality season out of him, and that'll determine their fate, I think, whether they can, if they can stay with the likes of Toronto and Florida in this division. So for now, I've got them penciled in at fourth. And the Ottawa team, I think, is a team that's got the big arrow going up for me. I think that we're going to see a big jump from them. They've got a wealth of talent, a young talent on this club that they've accumulated up front. And I think a big turnaround from Matt Murray is going to be a key part of this season as well for this team. So I got them fifth place, and it's largely in part due to the fact that I think Montreal is facing a lot of trouble out of the gate, and it only got much worse this morning with the news from Carey Price's camp. And again, the sooner they right that situation, the better for their fortunes. I just don't think there's enough there in a very deep division to call this a playoff team this year. And so that's maybe the biggest development in the Atlantic outlook. And beyond that, Detroit hopefully will take an incremental step, but they're in with a lot of heavyweights. And so even though we pencil them in at seventh, they are going to be an improved team. And that means that there's going to be a heck of a lot of distance between them and maybe the worst team in the league in Buffalo. So that's the way I see it too. AJ, any final thoughts? We're a week away from the start of the regular season, and next week I want to focus on the club's special teams. We'll take a look at the way they're looking, and a key part of your draft preparation as well as maybe the final piece in our work from where I sit. But anything you want to add before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're getting so very, very close, Paul. It's just a couple of days. You know, I mentioned October 12th, a Tuesday, we will see the defending champs, Tampa Bay Lightning, with the banner raising, followed by the debut of the Seattle Kraken on the 12th here. Both games I definitely want to watch here, and I'm looking forward to it. We'll get a chance to see the Kraken in action. We'll have to wait a little bit longer for their home opener, which I'm sure will be an exciting moment as well, and another game to tune in. But yeah, Tuesday, we have real meaningful hockey, Paul, and I'm excited for it to finally be here.
Yeah, we'll share opening night impressions when we get together a week from now, but that wraps up our look around the league, and we hope we've done a decent job getting you ready for your preseason prep for your season-long pools, and we'll get you ready for DFS action too in the coming weeks as we open up our seventh season of PuckCast. And that wraps up our look at the Atlantic Division today. So thanks for listening to RotoWire Signature Fantasy Hockey Podcast. We thank our sponsor at Owner's Box. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen in to PuckCast to get our tips to stay ahead of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.